Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's a January afternoon. We have had very cold weather, and it's a little warmer today. It'll be a little warmer tomorrow. Perfect time to begin thinking spring. And so it's our first gardening show of 2014. Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, is here. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. We welcome your calls, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, as we talk gardening. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us even at voxpop@wamc.org. But feel free to give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Fred, Greg, here comes spring, huh?
It's great to be back.
Nice to have you guys here. And as we get ready, we already have a question here. A question from Anonymous Sandy. I grow the herbs in my house, like parsley, thyme, basil, but how do I best dry them to save / use them?
Well, I've got some tips for that.
Yeah, it's very easy.
It is very easy, yeah. The main thing you're going to want to do is make sure you get good airflow around the herbs, so like a screen. Ideally, a dark place. Light is not necessarily good to when you're starting to dry herbs. So a dark place with some good airflow, put them on a screen so that you get air both above and below. And, potentially rotate them a couple of times in the drying process. And when they dry to the point where they're starting to break, they're definitely done. And you can put them in glass, store them in glass.
And certainly working them with a little bit of heat on a heated surface, the oven, the radiators, anything like that. It's very simple.
It's obviously the ground is frozen. Is there anything we should be doing for our outside gardens right now?
Well, just because the trees are sleeping and they're dormant doesn't mean Greg and I are. So we definitely are really busy here. And there's a million things you can do in the landscape right now. In fact, ironically, a lot of people don't realize, but the dormant season is literally one of the best times to do pruning. And here in the Capital Region, there's a disease known as oak wilt. Oak wilt is a disease that's been around for a while, and it's not to be confused with the sudden oak death that's happened out west. Oak wilt has been around probably since the 70s, but it's relatively new in the Capital Region.
Okay.
And in the last few years, I think the first sighting occurred. And now that oak wilt is around, one of the things that makes that disease, which is one of the main diseases for oaks in our area, spread from tree to tree is open pruning wounds. So the goal is to only prune oaks during the dormant season.
Okay.
Apples are going to be coming up. There's a lot of trees and shrubs that are in a perfect timing for doing pruning.
All of your, quote, fruit trees, it's a great time to do that.
That's right.
A lot of your, ornamental shade trees.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we're suggesting you hold off on evergreens that you're waiting. If you need to do a early season pruning, you would wait till it's a little warmer. April would work well. And then, of course, flowering shrubs, your spring flowering shrubs, say something like a magnolia, forsythia. No reason why you can't go out there actually starting now and take those branches off to then force them in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need to do a little structural pruning, that's one way to sort of reuse those, the crabapple branches, the apple branches, all those things could be forced again in the house. But if you don't have to prune those flowering shrubs, it's generally that next round is the best time, which is post bloom.
That's right.
June.
That's for the lilacs and the forsythias what we would call shrubs that bloom on previous seasons wood. In other words, their flower buds were set up throughout the last growing season. So if you prune those shrubs now, like lilacs and forsythia, you're taking away flower buds. Like Greg said, you could bring those branches in and force them, and they're really nice bouquets. But there are also a group of shrubs that will bloom on current season's wood, such as Rose of Sharon. And those would actually be pruned. You could do them now. You could do them anytime up to the point which they grow.
Because
those you want to prune before they grow. So you got to kind of know which what kind of shrub you're dealing with.
And
previous
season's
wood.
We can keep going with other tasks to
all
do
right.
If you want.
Well, if things get slow, we have a lot of calls. And before we get to the first call, it's been a cold stretch.
It has
Does
been
this
cold.
Bode well as far as a lack of insect pests?
The cold temperatures will definitely help control insects and diseases. That's right.
It'll be a better year.
In some cases, the fluctuations are one of the biggest problems with cold. So when you have that 70-degree day and it drops to 20 below, like literally a day later, like we've kind of almost had here in our area, that is not good for trees. Staying cold is better than fluctuating hot to cold.
And I would say that this year, again, this is just all in my head. I could be wrong, but this year the fluctuations have been more minimal than past years. We have had some much harsher years for plants. That this year is probably moderately harsh for plants, pretty good for plants, and much harder on the insects.
All right, let's go to the phones at 800-348-2551. We start with Kerry in Plainfield. Kerry, you're up.
Hi, guys. How you doing today?
Good.
I look so forward to the first garden show. You know, for me, it's sort of a hint that we're starting around the corner towards springtime.
Well, you're the first caller of the year, so go ahead.
I think I was last year, too.
There you go.
Wonderful.
My question, though, is, you know, what I did last year is I'm not sure of the botanical name, but I call them potato plants. They're ornamental, and I put them in my window flower boxes.
Yep.
And in the fall, and I cleaned them out and everything. They have a good-sized potato on them. They're probably 2 inches in diameter, and they look like a red potato you'd buy in a supermarket.
Yeah, they're a...
Are they edible?
Yes, they are, actually. They're a type of sweet potato.
Really?
Yeah, so they are in the same, I believe, same genus. I'm not sure about species. You know, the sweet potatoes have been modified quite a bit over the years, and the flavor of a true sweet potato would probably be much better than these. I have never eaten them, but they are edible, that's for sure.
Okay, okay. Thank you. One more quick question, too. I love sycamore trees.
Me
the looks
too.
Of them. And I live on a fairly large pond, and I'm close to the water. And when I dig into my soil, if I dig down about a foot, the soil starts getting very moist, wet.
Okay.
And I heard that a tree that would probably grow good in the conditions that I have is what they call a London Plain sycamore tree.
That is related to the sycamores. The American sycamore, of course, is native to the United States, and the London Plain tree, which is what you're talking about, looks in a lot of cases very similar to that American sycamore. The London Plain tree will take it drier than the classic sycamore. Sycamores are almost always found in those river bottoms here in America. So if you had a wet spot, I would tend to think that the American sycamore would do better than the London Plane tree. And I really can't think of any major reasons why you wouldn't want to plant a sycamore, except for the fact that they are a little bit more prone to anthracnose, which is a fungus, and the London Planes are a little bit more resistant to that anthracnose pathogen, the fungal pathogen.
The only other issue that we've had with London Plane tree is the hardiness, that it tends to hover at a 5-6, and cold winters do damage it in the Berkshires.
Now, when you say hover at a 5-6, what does that mean?
So zone
okay.
5 or 6. Thanks,
yep.
Thanks,
okay.
Ray.
Are they fast growing? Or
they are a relatively fast growing tree, and like I said, I would probably gravitate towards the native one because we know that thing is built and designed for floodplain types of plantings, kind of like what you're describing.
Okay.
Right. Just the only thing you want to watch for is a foliar disease called anthracnose. But in almost every case, in fact, I can't even think of a sycamore that I've ever seen die as a result of just anthracnose. Usually it's other pathogens that are working on it. But it defoliates it at the end of the summer when it's not that critical.
And a couple other trees, black gum or Nyssa.
Yep.
Sylvatica, a great
beautiful
wet-tolerant tree,
really?
Does the same kind of thing, lives with its toes sipping, and actually will tolerate the range. They will also take a drier situation. And then Acer rubrum, which is the traditional red maple, green leaf, turns red in the fall. That tree is tolerant.
Yeah, and if you wanted the conifer, a bald cypress would be unbelievable. And those are the ones that you see in the swamps. And if you look at pictures of, like, you know, Louisiana, Georgia, Florida, you'll see those cypresses with the knees coming up out of the water. Well, that same tree actually can live in Maine. And it's probably the most adaptable tree that I know of that's native to the United States. And it will literally live in the swamps of Florida. And it'll go all the way to Maine.
Wow.
It'll work as a completely standing water tree, and it'll work as an urban plant right outside WAMC on the streets of Albany.
Amazing.
Amazing plant, bald cypress.
All right, let's go to Chris in Walker Valley. Chris, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Sure. My question is about wisteria. I planted one on the sunny side of my house 20 years ago, and I have never had a bloom.
This happens. First thing we like to say is to, you know, in hindsight, it's 2020, of course, but is that if people out there thinking about wisteria, try to pick named varieties, that these are selections that have been blooming and, you know, are specific to blooming, so it makes it a little easier. But otherwise, pruning is the thing that we recommend. And earlier we were talking about pruning, so here we are, perfect time, you could be doing it now. And if you step outside and look at all of the previous year's growth, you'll see these very thin, tanny brown stems with little or no buds, and they sort of terminate with nothing, and they're even dry possibly on that end. If you grab them and try to break them, they may be alive, but not much life in the very end. Follow that back until the wood gets heavier and thicker and has some kind of knobby buds on it. That's the two-year-old wood. And so by removing all of that long, skinny stuff and leaving just this sort of skeletal or almost deer antler structure of the second-year wood, you help promote the flower buds, which ideally are already set. As Fred was saying, these have already been set for the year, so they have to either be there or not, to break out of that kind of woody, gnarly mass at the base of that long, skinny growth.
All right. Chris, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much for calling. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. We'll be back.
Support comes from Bow Wow Bathhouse Resort and Daycare, South Deerfield, Massachusetts. For over 7 years, providing 10 hours of daily indoor-outdoor play, professional grooming, and retail shop. TheBowWowBathhouse.com. And the Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole-grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Hey, guess what? It's the gardening show. First one of the year here in the dead of winter, but that means spring is on the way. Fred Breglia and Greg Ward join me this afternoon. I'm Ray Graff. Here's one from email, gentlemen. Chris in Cornwall, New York. The deer have done a number on my green giant arborvitae, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's Latin, whatever. Is there anything I can do in the spring to help them recover? Thanks, Chris.
Yep, that's common. Deer love arborvitae. The good thing about arborvitae, unlike junipers, is that if you prune them back to old wood, which it kind of sounds like that may have been happening to this gentleman's shrubs, is that arborvitae will reflush new growth from the old wood. So okay. All you got to do is really just prevent continuous browsing and allow those lower branches to regrow, and they will grow out pretty well. Again, preventing more deer damage in the future by probably with those fencing.
Yeah. And the future being maybe today or tomorrow.
And maybe today or tomorrow.
If there's any green left, you know, they're going to return.
That's true.
And so that, you know, you can get that sort of heavy-duty deer netting, and you can wrap them individually right now because you can't really put stakes in the ground.
That's right.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. It's Mark in Albany's turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
It's great great to have the show back for another season. Question in relation to, I have a backyard garden, and I start some of my vegetable plants inside with a grow light. And I've noticed lately that my tomatoes, specifically, last year was not a good year. I think a lot of backyard gardeners would agree with me. I don't know why. But is it too early to start early grow tomatoes and specifically also my broccoli and some of the other stuff?
Way too early.
Way too early.
Yeah.
When's the earliest I can start my vegetables? Because I want to get a head start and see if maybe it was because I started it too late. When would be the earliest I could start growing them from seed inside?
So if you want to start things that need to be started early, Onions and leeks are usually sort of the first of the year kinds of things. If you like to grow those things, then those would be something you would usually start in March, maybe the end of February. Excuse me. Not much sooner than that. Tomatoes, if you have a really sunny location in your house or a small greenhouse sunroom, then starting them around the 1st of April is probably as soon as you really want to do it. And if you don't have if you don't have a lot of sun, in other words, they're still going to get leggy and whatnot, you really should wait just a little bit longer. I would wait until maybe the second week of April so that you're able to move them out and harden them off and give them more light if we have some nice weather in May. It becomes a little juggling game because you're not going to be planting those in the ground. I don't know, Albany, yeah. Not going to be planting those in the ground until the end of May.
Okay.
Correct.
All right.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll be listening.
Mark, thank you very much for joining us here on the First Gardening Show of 2014. Fred in Ware, Mass. You're up, Fred. Hi.
Hey, how are you today?
Good.
Hey, I just recently bought a house and was very happy to find that there's a big apple tree on the property, and it looks like an old piece of driftwood. I mean, it's all twisted and gnarled, but it's huge. It's got about an 18-inch base on it, and I don't know, it might be 100 years old. It's very old, obviously, and puts out probably a couple thousand apples a year,
nice,
from what I've seen. And I always thought you'd get worms if you didn't spray a tree, but apparently there's no worms at all. It's just basically you get some like mottling on the skin where it maybe turns a little brownish or greenish, and you can scrub a lot of that off, but it doesn't really affect the apple flesh. So anyway, I was wondering, first of all, let's see, as far as finding out what kind of variety is there somewhere you can like do a DNA test or just send a sample to somebody where they can identify the variety of it? It doesn't look like anything I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I've got that question a lot of times over the years, and sometimes there's a lot of old variety apples that have been planted, and as a result of that, it's a lot of times hard to tell exactly which cultivar or variety you've got. But the fact that it's old is probably a good thing, because in a lot of ways they're limited to how many different species that were around. But mm-hmm. I always say if you could take samples of that and go to the people that are most involved with apples, like the apple orchards and some of the producers, they would probably have a better idea mm-hmm. as to what you got, especially if you could bring some of the fruit with it and document the flower, take photos of the flower. The more you can give them, more clues, flower, fruit, leaf.
Mm. We found that fruit is really...
That's the one of the best ways.
Yeah, that there's just no sure way without, and having, someone who has either grown those varieties or have seen those varieties, so someone who has a substantial orchard to begin with.
Is it maybe more resistant to worms because it's an older variety, not a hybrid or something?
That might be the case. There are... resistance basically means that it doesn't mean that a tree will not get a disease or an insect. What it means is it will get it in a much lesser case. So the fact that you have an apple that you've got pretty good fruit with and you've done nothing for it, that's a good variety to keep around and care for that tree. So
they taste great. Well, now how can I decide which branches to prune?
Well, I would say the first priority of pruning is dead wood. So, and it all starts with a proper cut, because pruning is one of the easiest ways to mess a plant
up. Dead wood, or can you just cut the dead wood from the...
You're going to want to make it... branches originate, and wherever they grow from, they'll have a collar, an area that's kind of swollen, and at sort of the base of that branch, or even a lateral branch to a main branch, or a main branch back to a trunk. And you want to make sure that you're cutting back as close to that collar as you can without actually hitting the collar.
Okay.
The reason why that's so important is because that's the only part of the plant that can grow and close those wounds over. So if you just kick even a dead branch and just take it off randomly and leave a stub,
it's going to be open.
It'll just be an open wound, and then you got rot that can get in, and then that's basically, if you ever seen a hollowed apple tree, very common, that's actually a result of what we call compartmentalization failure. In other words, the wound was left open long enough, it had enough wounds that it added up to enough rot inside the trunk, and then as time goes on, these chemical walls of compartmentalization, think of it as putting your decay in jail, eventually those walls fail and break down, and most rapidly up and down the stem vertically.
And so there are a lot of guides out there, a lot of pruning guides that are often cover a lot of things, but you can certainly find them probably specific even to apples online. I bet you could find some of this. Maybe if you just Googled, old overgrown apple tree, it would come, something would come up. There's a, the one I'm thinking of, I think, is a Story publication or Lewis Hill. Maybe Lewis Hill is the author. But there are specific pages to how to renovate an old tree.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Versus pruning a relatively well-pruned tree.
Yep.
And, you know, the rule of thumb also that would be added there is usually you're not going at it all at once. You do this over the course of a few years, just partly so you can still get some of those apples, but also because it will ask you to take a lot of the tree out, and you need to have the tree returning in some form, you know, every year to sort of balance that out.
Okay.
But if you're focused on deadwood, and you focused on a lot of the quick sprouts that you see, they're called water sprouts or suckers around a base.
Mm-hmm.
Those can be taken out literally almost any time.
Yep.
So deadwood anytime, proper pruning cuts, taking out the water sprouts and the quick sprouts that are growing up around a base, suckers. That it doesn't even count towards the foliage in most cases unless those water sprouts have become huge, and then it would. Mm-hmm. But and then you want to limit the amount of branches that you're taking off to about 30%, 35% of the total branches of that tree. So no more than a third, better to even stick towards a quarter.
Okay.
Now, if you put the black tar stuff on where the branches where you prune them off, does that do as good a job as cutting them off toward the color? Or,
no. No, actually, it's been proven that black tar, or in fact almost any pruning paint, has been proven through research through the International Society of Arboriculture to not work at all.
Okay.
And in fact, can actually prevent the tree's natural closure. So you want to avoid pruning paints and tars. And go to the ISA website. If you type in International Society of Arboriculture pruning, there's a ton of consumer brochures that the ISA put out. And you could definitely follow, I would say, treat the ISA as a gospel in terms of tree care.
Fred, thank you very much for the call. We go to Doe in Wendell, Mass. Doe, you're on.
Hi. My daughter has a very nice lawn, a well-established lawn in a sunny spot. She wants to start growing vegetables. I'm not sure if that lawn has ever been treated with chemicals, but she wants to start soon so she can start planting in April. What's the first thing she ought to do?
All right.
Well,
most people do just that. They pick a nice sunny spot and there's grass there. And if you wanted to plant immediately, my first suggestion would be to peel the grass. To actually
peel the grass. What does that mean?
Now, you know, there are a lot of different ways to make the garden, but to use some tool, and it can be simply a shovel.
Okay.
There are things that you can rent called sod cutters.
All right.
That are motorized and run along and cut a swath. And they take about an inch of soil with the sod, and then you roll that up or scoop that up into your wheelbarrow and make a little compost pile with it.
Okay.
So now you have, ideally, this small, you know, whatever you want, 10 by 10, 10 by 20 plot, with no grass on it. You then, this first season, you're going to just turn that over, work in some organic matter, and go ahead and plant and add some nutrients as you see fit, depending on the plants you're putting in. Very often that first year, the soil is excellently set up so that you... excellently set up.
That's fine. Yeah, that'll be fine.
Thanks. Anyway,
I have suggested to her that she have some soil tested. And if she finds out there's chemicals in it, what can she do to fix it before she plants? She wants to go organic.
Well, starting with a soil test is a good idea. More for pH. If you're just in a typical, if you're in a typical urban soil, the odds of it just being chemicalized is probably not, you know, not really great. It's probably not bad soil.
Good.
The issues, I would say there are,
pH
would be, issues would be potential lead contamination, which if it's next to a house an old house and the house has been painted over several times, then there's more than likely some lead in the soil. But if it's, you know, 50 feet away from the house, I it's very unlikely that that's the case. And then if you're concerned with lawn weed controls, those things don't last more than a few years at most. And so unless she's been putting them down, I'm sure you're clear of that as well.
Okay.
Good.
Doe, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye now. Let's go to Heidi in Windham, New York. Heidi, you're on.
Hi, I apologize in advance. I'm very hoarse. I'm actually a native of Great Barrington originally, so I'm very familiar with warts. But anyway, my question is, I was very ambitious last summer, and I dug up about 500 daffodil bulbs and hyacinth and grape hyacinth from an old garden with the intention of transplanting them to another garden. And Then, of course, I got busy. It never happened. And then I was very irresponsible and left them all in a big pot on my deck, and they've been there ever since. Hmm. And they've had snow falling on them, rain, they've frozen. And my question is whether those bulbs could be salvageable at this point or whether they're probably all ruined.
Okay.
Are they in soil in a pot?
No, they're in about a 10-gallon planter bare.
All bare root there. You know, if you brought them, you know, if you could sort of, I don't know what the temperature is in Windham's, pretty cold, but if you could tell if they were still viable, they were firm, they were showing maybe a little bit of green on the top, maybe a little root development. If you knew they were viable, then you could pull them apart and plant them in containers with soil now and put them in a relatively protected place where they won't freeze and thaw. Ideally, they'll just sort of stay one temperature. So in your garage or even in your basement, if it stays cold.
Okay.
To allow them to root. They have to spend about 12, 15 weeks rooting, actually putting the roots out, and they have to do that at fairly low temperatures, above freezing but below, you know, 45, for that okay. to work out well. So if you could mimic that, then once they start to root in, and by this point it will be April anyway, you can take them outside and either enjoy them in the containers and then plant them or simply insert them into the ground when it's ready to work. Hmm.
But the odds of them being viable if they were left on a deck without any soil, with the temperatures, that if your temperatures have been anything like ours, and where are you, Windham? Windham? Oh, yeah, yep. So you've been like 20 below. my guess is probably not, but you never know. Sometimes nature, you know. I've told my mom that, too, and she's showed me plants. She brought plants back to life that I said forget about. So.
And I mean, they're very possible they are alive. It's very possible they are not. We've had experiences both
ways.
That's
right.
All right.
Yep.
Well, good luck, Heidi. Let us know how it works out, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum is here, and Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery. And we go to Pat in Poughkeepsie. Pat, you're on.
Well, hi, Ray. Hi. Yes, I was calling about my butterfly bush and my hydrangea bush. I was told that you usually prune them in the fall, and I didn't this fall. So do I do that this spring?
Well, with the butterfly bush, and I'll take that and let you take on the hydrangea, the butterfly bush is not actually supposed to be pruned in the fall. Around here, you actually want to treat butterfly bush sort of like a very hardy perennial. In a warmer zone, the butterfly bush would get to be much larger than we get them here in the capital region. And you're a little bit south of us, so you might even be – it's not going to hurt you to be south. It's going to be better to be in the south. But basically in the spring, when the everything starts to green up, and you could do this almost any time, but you're not going to touch it till spring, I use my fingernail, and I go out and I scratch the branches. And if you see green, then the branches are alive, in which case they're probably okay. You don't have to prune them. But in most cases, they'll die back to some undetermined amount depending on the weather conditions. And if you start to see brown, you want to keep cutting them back. Like at my mom's house in Summit, it's really cold, and they usually get cut to about 6 inches of the ground in the spring. So wait till you see it, scratch it. If it's green, it's still good. You can cut it back at the point which it's brown, and then wait till stuff starts to grow in the springtime, and then you'll see what's not alive and what's not, and then you can make your choice from there.
That's the
butterfly bush.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. I'm glad to know that it was okay not to have pruned, better not to have pruned it in the fall.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it grows much taller than I wanted it to. It even grows taller than I am.
You can cut it with literally almost right to the ground, a couple of 3 inches to the ground. If you want to keep it smaller in the spring, same deal. You don't even have to, even if it is alive, it's okay. You can cut it 3-4 inches to the ground. It's going to give you a brand new shrub that will bloom that season.
But wait.
Oh, and it will bloom. Thank you.
Yep, but wait till spring.
Yeah. Right.
Okay,
spring
now the hydrangea.
Being April?
Wait till, I would say late April.
Okay, great.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
What kind of hydrangea do you have?
I don't know.
That varies.
What color flower is it?
Blue.
Yeah, so similar thing. No pruning until spring. And with those, only pruning the dead wood is most important. They don't get too tall, so it's not really usually a height issue. It's you don't really want to take off any live wood if you can help it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Well, and my surprise is it's about 8 years old.
Nice.
And suddenly last year the deer decided they liked
it. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
And, of course, not until summer when it had flower
buds. Until it's beautiful. Right. Until it's beautiful. And it's so hard not to get angry at them.
But
they act like they were there first. Yeah. You know?
That's funny.
Think about those deer repellents just as it starts to leaf out. And if you can remember to do it sort of weekly, every 10 days, just spritz the tips of the plant, tops of the plant, that should discourage them once the flowers
come. Now, what is a good, safe deer repellent?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different things. People can make it from stuff around their house, rotted eggs and some pepper as a recipe.
It'll keep everybody else away as well.
It will. Yeah, I believe there's a recipe. We had it on the Landis Arboretum website. I think it's still there. It's called Fred's Deer Be Gone. but it's just basically a lot of homemade ingredients that, and it does work, but you got to reapply it. Now, sure, Greg,
most commercial products are a similar combination.
Okay.
They're eggs and pepper,
capsicum,
maybe some garlic in there. And so these are things you can make at home.
Yep.
You know, do they have stickers that will last much longer? Not really. No, they're convenient is what they are.
Okay.
They're all ready
so
to go.
So you don't have to do that yourself.
Right.
A little garlic in there, too.
But I got a feeling Fred enjoys doing it by himself.
I think he does.
You know, I've known you to grind up some bugs and make
I've made some pretty harsh martinis in my day.
Hey, all right, let's take a break. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop, the gardening show.
Support comes from Sherry Voss Salon and Spa, Woodstock, specializing in hair color and cut, skin treatments, bridal parties, and spa services. SherryVossSalon.com. And Berkshire Museum, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Berkshire Collects, on view through May 11th, showcasing more than 40 varied collections from motorcycles to wind-up toys, cartoons, vintage guitars, antique toasters, and more. BerkshireMuseum.org.
One 800 348 2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop. Fred Bregley is here. Greg Ward is here. I'm Ray Graff. It's the first gardening show of 2014. And gentlemen, here's one from email. This is Ariel. It says, "Hi guys, here in the Pioneer Valley of Massachusetts, we're having a mini January thaw this weekend. Highs in the mid-40s.
Whoa.
Thus, two questions. One, every year I let my yard grow wild all spring because the gorgeous wildflowers come in more abundant and varied every year. I love my carpets of violets, buttercups, and so many others I cannot name. However, I also notice a few new species of greenery every year that are kind of nasty and pervasive. All that stuff with runner roots that is not pretty to most of us. So the first question is, if my soil softens enough by Sunday afternoon to do a bit of shallow rototilling, will that help or hurt the wildflowers this season? I don't want to traumatize the violets, and I would midwinter tilling encourage or discourage whatever new pervasives are waiting?" That's the first question.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I got through it. That's the wow.
It's a lot of work. My first guess is that it would be way too soon, that even if it is warm, that the soil is essentially frozen, and if it's not completely frozen, it's just too wet and too to work with. You do not want to work the soil until it's thawed and well-drained.
Yep.
And that, even in the Pioneer Valley, can't be until at least the first of
April. All right, well, I guess that negates number two. The number two question, again, if the dirt can be dug, would it be okay to put in a few tulip bulbs? I'm a newbie gardener who has never grown anything before except for hostas and a few companion perennials. Thanks. Happy almost spring, Ariel.
The only thing you could really be, you could plant anything you forgot to plant last fall, and that could include tulip bulbs.
Right away?
Well, theoretically, yes, you dig a hole, you plant them, it's done. But, the tulips need that 13, 15 weeks as well. If you have a tulip bulb today, it may have dried out. It may not be viable any longer. I do have, it's confession time. I have a couple of pots of perennials. I have a veronicastrum and something else I can't remember.
Now,
what
why
it is.
Would you have to confess that?
There they are sitting in my garage because I didn't get to plant them this year. They're just sitting in there in a pot, and I plan to plant them in April. But if there wasn't my ground wasn't frozen and the snow wasn't covering my yard, I could plant them today. So if that happens in the Pioneer Valley this weekend, then technically, yes, you can.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go back to the line. And Patty and Otis. Hello, Patty.
Hey, Ray. I'm calling with a question about climbing plants. We have a deck in our backyard that's pretty much full southern exposure, and we've got very tall, you know, support posts for the deck. So over the years, I've been trying to plant things that will climb up those posts and kind of cover them. I've put in three different honeysuckle varieties, which have done very well. I put in a climbing hydrangea, which has grown but has never bloomed. And I put in some Concord grapes with some little cross wires for it to grow on. My question, two questions, is number one, I forgot if I'm supposed to be trimming the honeysuckle or the hydrangea or the Concord grapes. And do you have suggestions for any other plants that would be different than those, are fairly hardy, and would climb and have potentially blooms on them to cover up some more of the posts? I haven't done them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't prune the hydrangea ever.
Okay.
Unless, except for directional pruning, you want it to go in a certain way, and you know there it has a couple of competing branches, so you could take one of those out. But hydrangea blooms, even though it blooms fairly late, it blooms on that old wood, and so you don't want to be doing any severe pruning in the spring.
Yep, usually doesn't require a lot of pruning either.
Right.
If it's put
the
in
shape, it's fine. It's going around the post and staying there and curling around it, but it hasn't bloomed yet, and I think it's like.
They're
4 years old now?
Yeah, they're not fast.
It does take a little while with those guys, yep. They're a slower grower in general.
It could be another 4 years. Maybe this year. But
it's still pretty.
Yeah, it is. I love climbing hydrangea.
Yeah,
love that plant.
Yeah, the foliage is beautiful.
Plant.
The bark right now, the exfoliating, the bark is peeling.
Elegant plant.
It's rusty.
The
honeysuckle bloom on new wood, those honeysuckle vines, and so those can all be pruned back if you want to, and the reason to do it is to just tidy them up. There's
or
too much.
Or if it's growing somewhere, you don't want it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Okay.
And then the grapes,
so
they are going to require pruning.
Okay. And when should I prune those?
Well, they're going to vary depending on.
You could do it now through April before they grow. Again, if you're looking to grow the grape, for a good crop, then you're trying to do a couple of things. You're trying to create a heavy trunk and then some branching, and that branching then needs to be supported with some kind of structure.
Okay.
And so you bring it out to that point, and then you actually, not unlike we were talking about with wisteria, you bring it back to these old wood budded ends, in which case that's where the flowers will be, and then the fruit will form. And so every year you're sort of creating some removal of the previous year's growth.
So in the spring, do the grapes only back to the old wood?
If your grape is very young and just sort of getting going, I might not recommend doing much at all. And if
it's 2 years old,
yeah,
you might be okay for a while yet.
Yeah.
Then
okay, and then the honeysuckle, fall or spring pruning?
Well, you would prune that late winter, early spring. Because it'll bloom on current season's wood. So once any shrub that will bloom on current season's wood, such as like Rose of Sharon and honeysuckle, those are going to be pruned prior to bud break. So when you see buds beginning to swell, you want to get those. You would definitely want to make sure that the pruning occurred before it leaves out.
So you could do that now. In the old days, we used to say, "Oh no, don't do anything if the weather's too harsh. You know, it might hurt the plants." But we're really finding that most of these very tolerant, hardy plants, pruning is not a really big deal for them. So you could be pruning them now, but
February, even into March,
April, really.
Yep. Same for like apple trees. It's similar to apple trees pruning.
You planning to make some wine, Patty?
And then, when I make the wine, Ray, but we'll share it when the opening day at City Field. Any suggestions for covering the rest of the posts that I have? I have to be sun tolerant because it's fairly, sunny, full exposure there.
I've certainly got one. So one of my favorite climbers is the Betty Corning clematis. It's a signature plant over at the Landis Arboretum because one of our founding benefactors was actually Betty Corning, and she had discovered it here in the Capital Region. And ever since then, we've grown them out at the Arboretum. And I've had, at one point at the Arboretum, probably 30 different species of clematis. And of all the species, by far, the one that requires the least amount of work and looks the best, and every time people come to visit, always say, whoa, what's that one? Betty Corning clematis. It's the one clematis that is extremely attractive, good-looking, and requires very little work in terms of keeping it really healthy. Now, I'm sure Greg's got a favorite to recommend.
Right. Well, when it comes to clematis, there are a lot of varieties, and it's really hard to choose, so there are plenty of other colors. There is a later-blooming one called Sweet Autumn clematis that would tend to have a heavy bloom for late August, September. Very aggressive, not unlike the honeysuckle in its mass and the way it grows.
And real tough, too.
There are some pretty hardy, pretty easy to take care of roses. If this is a sunny location, they would tolerate that quite nicely.
Okay.
A climbing rose.
A climbing rose, and New Dawn is a really nice one, nice kind of peachy white one. But there are several others. If you look around or you want to, send an email to the Ward's Nursery website, we can give you a list of a few. And then there's some annual vines.
I live near you because all those plants that I have came from you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much. And then there's some really fun annual vines that you would have to plant every year, but could give you some sort of fill in the gaps, give you some nice July, August, September color as well.
Okay. And we'll give your contact information at the end. Patty, let's go, Mets. We'll see
you.
Bye.
Thanks, Ray. See you on Monday.
All right, for the fun drive. That's right. Patty is one of the great volunteers here during the fun drive.
Thank you, Patty.
The fun drive starts on Monday morning at 6 a.m. And if you want to shorten the fun drive, by the way, go to WAMC.org and feed the lockbox. We're up over 400,000 in the lockbox, and we are taking days, literally days, off this fun drive. So if you want to shorten it, make your pledge right now. It all counts on day one. All right, there's my pitch. Now back to the phones. Anne in West Stockbridge. Anne.
Hi. I just wanted to ask you about, I'm starting putting in a new garden. I'm in a new house that has wonderful soil for septic systems, but terrible for gardening. It's pretty gravelly. So I need to bring in all new soil. And I was wondering about, a horse barn that has manure from years and years and years and years that's just been sitting there composting. And I know in the past when I had horses, just about all my vegetables would at some point pop up in my manure pile.
Yep. That's good stuff, that old rotted manure.
I was thinking of getting as much as I could and bringing it over and having it, be a good part of my initial soil.
Yeah, so yep. Using it as the organic matter nutrient source for,
right,
and incorporating that into your soil.
Well, I have no soil. I really have no soil.
Okay, so that would be a great organic component of your new soil.
What percentage would that be? What I want that to be.
Honestly, if it's rotted, and it's like soil now, you could probably almost make an entire garden out of that, and adding a few other complementary organics. I mean, with perennial gardens and vegetable gardens in particular, the general rule is organic. Add more organics.
Add more organics. 20-30% organic matter to everything else. It sounds like the only thing you're sort of missing is loam, but I bet there's some there. Not a lot. And so you could go ahead and try to find some topsoil. More than likely, you're going to find it either to be a sandy loam, which you already have, sort of the sandy, gravelly aspect. Or it's going to be sort of an organic material with some sand in it, which is what you're going to create anyway. So what I'm saying is I think unless they literally took 2 feet of soil off of your yard and that's all you see now and it didn't get put back, if what's there is growing some grass and some weeds and, anything else that falls on there germinates, then use that soil.
Okay.
Okay. Well, actually, you can't dig into it and you can't rototill. So I don't know. How much soil would you? How many? I was thinking I'd have like a foot. I already brought in a half a foot of
just like landscape soil.
Are you making it like a raised bed, like something to contain it? Yeah. So, you know, typically, so, and you're doing predominantly vegetable gardens or more?
Yeah.
So, you know, 12 inches would be more than enough.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And thank you very much for the call. Fred Breglia is here. Greg Ward is here. It's the Garden Show, first one of 2014. And I'll tell you what, boys, this has been well received. A lot of people are ready to go.
People are ready for spring.
I think so. And we had one that we lost, John in Albany, and he wanted to know when to tap maple trees. Any ideas?
I used to do that, actually. My brother and I used to do a number of, we used to make our own syrup. So, and it works really well. It takes about, I think the ratio is about 40 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup.
Really?
I believe, if I remember that correctly. And you could put this, I mean, a lot of the maple farms have the spigots in already, just waiting for that temperature to start to warm up enough and the right conditions to get you that sap flow. But, you know, we always did it a little later in the winter.
I assume there's a trick, early spring. A trick as to where to put the tap?
Usually where you can reach them.
That's it.
It doesn't matter if you go high or low. I mean, I doubt anyone would ever put them into branches. But
the angle of the tap should point slightly down.
That's
so
right.
That
so it flows.
Right. You won't kill the tree. This amazes me.
No, because if you think of it, it's just a small hole, 3 or 4 inches in depth. How many times does branches get ripped off of trees? I mean,
they will
seal up. It is an injury, though. So people have always asked me that. It is indeed an injury, but a healthy tree should close it up.
And there probably is a flow time, like it will have to do with degree days and the temperature of that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that is. You probably could find that online, though. And either way, it's probably going to be, you know, late February.
That's what I would think, no matter what.
Or sooner.
All right, let's go to Bob in Old Forge. Bob, you're on.
Yes, I'm interested in some information on putting some new seedlings into the ground. They're just 1-year-old seedlings that I'm going to be planting. And I wondered if I should put some peat moss in with them, or they're going in a very well drained area. Actually, too well drained for what I'm putting in there. I'm putting in Norway spruce, and the problem I've had in the past with putting seedlings in is it's so well drained, it's somewhat shaded, it's so well drained that I don't. The ground is very dry even when I put them in, and there's no way of watering them.
Yeah, are these seedlings coming to you bare root?
Yes, they are. Yeah.
So could I suggest that you don't plant them out when they arrive, that you put them in a container when they arrive, and you actually plant them all into small pots and keep them that way until they break bud and actually root in that container, and then that way they're close to the house, you can water them, you can keep an eye on them, you can protect them from the temperature fluctuations that occur and are often stressful to bare root plants in April and even May. And then you can transplant them. And if you can't get water to them, then holding them until August, September to transplant them would be very easy on the plants.
All right. I have done that in the fall in the past, but the seedlings aren't available in the fall, and I have transplanted them in the fall, and I found out that fall transplant was much better. In fact, I've even transplanted them as late as December and January when there was a thaw.
Yep.
And all those trees always survived.
Yep. Right. And so we're just doing that. You're just taking your spring seedlings, rooting them, and now you're going to be planting a little root ball, which is a much more stable way to go at the end of the season.
It'll increase the chance of those plants living dramatically. And it's very common in the nursery industry to buy in a bunch of bare root, pot them up, let them root out, and then you've got a solid plant. So,
all right.
All right, Bob.
Saving a lot of the cost on that shipping with the soil.
All right, we're out of time here, gentlemen. Contact information, Fred, you go first.
Yep, you can get us at www.landisarboretum.org. We have a brand new website, and we also have a Facebook page. So if you haven't liked us on Facebook, find us, Landis Arboretum, Facebook, and website.
I'll do that right away. So it's a new website, eh?
New website, yep. We launched it off this year, and really, really good, super accurate. It has our entire 2014 calendar up already with everything. I'm scary. I know everything I'm doing professionally for 2014.
Wow, that's amazing.
You never said I'd be disorganized.
That's great. And how about you, Greg?
Yeah, wardsnursery.com. We actually updated our website.
Nice.
And so it's we have a little game. Is it Find My Dad? Because my dad used to kind of feature prominently on the old one, and now he's still there somewhere.
Yeah.
Just not nice. Right up in front. You should find him because he's
so hours of fun at the Wards Nursery website. And the website again is?
Oh, yes, wardsnursery.com. And I will say we have some free classes coming up in March if you take a look at it on the website.
So fantastic. Well, gentlemen, this was a success. Nice to have you here in the dead of winter. And
great to be here.
Let's keep it going every month. Support comes from Field Goods, making weekly deliveries of fresh and frozen local produce to customers for pickup at community sites like the Meat House in Albany, Clifton Park on Saratoga. Fresh foods from small farms, field-goods.com. And Hubbard Hall Opera Theater, Cambridge, New York, presenting Carmen, a piano reduction on tour. Hubbard Hall, January 30th, Dorset Playhouse, February 1st, and University of Albany, February 2nd. HubbardHall.org for tickets. Thanks again to Greg Ward and Fred Breglia for being here. Zach Malloy, who was our engineer. Phones answered by Anonymous Sandy and our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. And, of course, to you at home for giving us a call today. Sorry if you didn't make it through. I'm Ray Graff. Now, tomorrow at 2 o'clock, it's a Food Friday. We have a lot of fun with that, so join us. Stay tuned now for a news update.